And joining me right now here on the phone line to recap UCF's big win last night at home against SMU, a special Wednesday night affair. This guy was at the bounce house. His name is Kyle Nash. He is with Black and Gold Banneret, and I know his NFL coverage is with the three-point conversion. Kyle, how you doing today, buddy?
Hey, great to be aboard. I had a fun one last night, man. I got to tell you, some things did not go the way I had expected, but yeah, it's a fun game if you're a UCF fan. 100% over there at FBC Mortgage, man. No question.
Have you ever been to a Wednesday night football game before?
I have not. No. And we were talking about that a little bit on amongst the Black and Gold Banneret guys. I think the last time they did it, they were members of Conference USA,
yeah,
if memory serves. So, yeah, going back far enough, there's a Sunday game here or there sprinkled in the MAC. You know, when you go real far back there, I mean, that's when you and I are still in school. But, like, you know, Wednesday is new for me, certainly as a member of the media at the very least.
All right. It was, I believe, 13-10 at halftime, SMU with the lead. And SMU was dominating that first half. What adjustments were made at halftime for UCF to get the victory?
You know, I feel like, Mark, that it was a situation where they were trying to bomb the ball a little bit, both sides actually, really. And then when Gus came out in the second half, John Rhys Plumlee started hitting some of those shorter passes. Heck, the first drive out of the locker room, UCF had what could be regarded as their best drive of the year, right? Here comes Bowser. He breaks off a big run. We're impressed there. Kobe Hudson making his longest catch to that point at his UCF career, you know, setting up the next one, which would then set up Ballester to get his first of the 3 1-yard touchdowns on the night, Mark. So I think it was just a matter. They came out, they were just more with their own identity to open the second half. Weren't playing panic, but they weren't connecting on certain things. And to Gus's credit, Ian mentioned that SMU was daring him to throw the ball. Yeah. Throughout the game, and they just finally started to get those connections, you know. And then when you're in football, Mark, when you get a balance, you get movement on the ball, the defense doesn't know what you're going to do, you have a higher rate of success, you know. And credit to Gus Malzahn for adjusting to his former protege and Rhett Lashley on the other sideline there for SMU.
I think the key is John Rhys Plumlee just trying to attempt to go down the field, and maybe Gus giving him that opportunity finally. Hey, we got to try it. And what are your thoughts then on Plumlee and the receivers finally stepping up and helping out their quarterback?
I'm glad you make that point about the receivers actually making some catches, Mark. That was a big part of it for me against Georgia Tech. So many drops in that game. And listen, give some credit to the beef, Mark. The offensive line had what I would regard, in my opinion, their best game of the year. And I believe Isaiah Bowser said the same in the postgame. Protection was probably the best it's been, considering, you know, their performance along with the strength of the opponent across the way. They easily outplayed what they did against Georgia Tech or Louisville and were under control in that second half, giving Plumlee the time to do what he needs to do to get the ball in the right place for the receivers, who then caught the ball finally and had so much yak. By my count, there was at least 3 plays, big plays, that became big plays by way of either Ryan O'Keefe or Javon Baker handling business.
Yeah, Baker was great. What about O'Keefe? I mean, this really just, I tweeted at the time, game over. Man, he took this ball and just like finally showed off the speed. Dude, it just felt like they finally got unleashed. Is that what it felt like at the bounce house last night?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. All of, listen, the line, the skill players, the quarterback, were all in sync on offense, especially in that second half, or I should say mostly in that second half. And it all fell into place from that point. And listen, credit to the receivers for stepping up to the challenge in their own right. Javon Baker and Ryan O'Keefe, both at the postgame press conference, said that they took it as a personal insult that Rhett Lashley and SMU came out with man coverage, as if they were like suddenly being told they weren't fast. And boy, did they take exception to that. You saw the result in the form of Ryan O'Keefe. I had asked him about that whole taking it as an insult facing man coverage thing. And he just basically said, yeah, man, they did that to me. I looked at him lining up on that play. I was like, yeah, I'm going to score. and he took it to the house right after that. But hey, let me bring this too, Mark. Conversely, let's take it to the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
These DBs were challenged in a way they have not been this year. I counted at least five times in the end zone that Tanner Mordecai challenged them by flinging it to a receiver. You had one interception and four passes defended inside the end zone. Big, big marks in big moments for those defensive backs for UCF.
Look, those receivers for SMU were dropping the ball. They had opportunities. That first half, I don't know why UCF was doing this. It looked like every DB was 5 yards off the ball and giving. It was like, we're going to give up these plays, but we're not going to break. And that defense, I talked about this with your colleague, Eric Lopez, Kyle. This is the best UCF defense I have seen in a long time. Do you feel that way?
Since 2017, at the very least. I'm not ready to anoint them better than 2014 with Blake Bortles and that group beating Baylor at the Fiesta Bowl eventually by the end of the year. But I am definitely prepared to put them in line with the likes of that group that was commanded by Shaquem Griffin. Now, the difference with that group is they were more stout up front, more veteran presence.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Tristan Hill and Jemias Pittman and those guys were big bodies that could take care of business. Not to say this group doesn't have those, but the difference with this defense is they relied more on the defensive front, while the experience is in the secondary for this edition of the defense. And listen, when you got Devon Wilson getting a key pressure late in the game, a fumble recovery, and also an interception, that's the kind of big night you would see from a big player in the 2017 group up front. He's having that all over the field as a member of the secondary. Biggest difference between the two, but I think you can statistically see similarities between those two defenses at this point. And I mean, listen, if you're as good as a defense that has a title of national champion on it, that's a big deal.
We're here with Kyle Nash with Black and Gold Banneret, recapping UCF's big win last night against SMU. Did it feel like by the third quarter that UCF wore down SMU and they couldn't play for 60 minutes?
That's not a bad interpretation. I take it a little differently. With me, Rhett Lashley was looking to get that big lead, because if you look at the film for the rest of the games leading into this one, Mark, you're not expecting UCF to be explosive. They've given you no evidence to think so.
Uh-oh.
And then here came the yak to that point. And here came John Rhys Plumlee delivering strikes, 20 for 29. Mark, if I said to you going into this game he's going to throw it nearly 30 times and do better than 67%, you would report me to HR and have me drug tested. The result of what we saw in that offense was nothing Lashley was prepared to expect, and I think he started to panic coaching-wise, in my opinion. You know, they're close, and now they're explosive. I got to get the ball down the field. Oh, no, my receivers are dropping it, and it just kind of collapsed for the Mustangs at that point. But
hey, SMU should have had 24 points in the first half. They left points on the table. They let UCF hang around. UCF just exploded in that third quarter. It's the best quarter they've had all year. They outscored them 14-0. And look, SMU, what they have, just garbage points to end the game? I mean, it's like, I'm in shock, and I want you to know this. There was a part of me in that first half where I would not have been shocked if you threw Mikey Keene in there for a series. That's how bad it looked in the first half. What about you there at the stadium?
Yeah, no, it felt rough. Listen, and Gus has said it throughout the past few weeks. He's put it on him that he hasn't coached this group well enough and that they were the ones leaving points on the board previously, right? It's like if it was a disease that UCF was contagious, they passed it to SMU and cured themselves in the second half. No, I'm with you on that 100%. To see the relief on Gus's face when I asked him about it post-game, about, hey, you know, even with the hurricane, you guys in practice found the resolve, you know, and I asked him what that says about his team, and he could just drop nothing with respect, but respect for not only cleaning up things football-wise, but dealing with the stress around Hurricane Ian. And a lot of guys being transfers, and including Gus himself, this was their first Florida hurricane.
Yeah.
And as you could see, apparently they had enough support to overcome and win the day for what was probably could arguably be Gus's biggest win in the regular season in his tenure at UCF.
All right, now you got me thinking here. Do you
I have this effect on people, Mark?
I know. Exactly. All right, you know what's funny? All right, the big rivalry, the war on I-4, you beat South Florida last year at the Bounce House. A close game that went down to the wire, but everyone knew they were going to win. So it wasn't shocking. I'm trying to think, like, all right, you beat Florida in the bowl game, but you're saying regular season.
I am.
You know what? It might be, because if they would have lost this game, the season is over. They're not winning the conference. They're not going to go to a big bowl game. There's not much to play for if they lose this game. But now, and I'll throw it back at you, they won this game, and they played big in that second half. Does this game give you confidence that this team can try to go win the conference championship now?
Certainly more than I had leading up to this point. I mean, Mark, I'm going to put all my cards on the table and prepare to take all the rebukes from UCF fanhood that I deserve for saying it. I predicted them losing Louisville. I predicted them losing this game. And, Mark, I also predicted them missing the conference championship. Now, Houston's done their part by completely disappointing all the way around, opening, losing to Tulane and, you know, all that drama. But between that and then UCF, what they did in that second half, you have to be more confident if you're a UCF fan today, and it's not close. You've been stuck with the worst-case scenario, and now you see what the best-case scenario is, Mark. If they put it somewhere in the middle, this is still a formidable American Athletic Conference team.
All right, so they're off, let's see, like about a week or so, because I think they're going to play on Thursday Night Football against Temple. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right, so you play
That's right.
So you're going to have some time off. You still have Cincinnati. I think they can do it, buddy. I think the key is Plumlee. I really do. I have confidence in this team. Do you feel like the team postgame when you're talking to them, do you feel like they have confidence moving forward?
Like never before, man. Like never before. It was great to see heads lifted. It was great to have eye contact. That was a little different than before. And this isn't to say that, you know, Plumlee and his receivers don't have good presence in those situations already anyway.
Yeah.
But there was a little bit more swag in those responses. It's a little different when you hear Ryan O'Keefe say, I knew I was going to beat him. You know, that's the kind of stuff that you saw. And it was great for John Rhys Plumlee, usually a very candid guy, by the way.
Yeah.
When asked if he does bad, he'll tell you he does. It was great to see him confident and, instead of worrying about his performance, paying tribute to those who were affected by Hurricane Ian.
That's a good point. He had a throw. Was it in the second quarter? He hit a receiver down the right seam. You know what I'm talking about. And, like, it was like a back shoulder throw, like Aaron Rodgers style. It's like if you were going to be the coach for John Rhys Plumlee, what does he need to do to improve moving forward on the season?
You know, what I'd like to see is, and as much as I heard it from Gus and didn't always necessarily buy it, there's still an element of him that he's just now, this is his first time in 2 years starting at the position, and now he's five games in. I think we're starting to see accuracy materialize where we didn't necessarily. I mean, yeah, sure, he had a few throws that nailed it in the spring game, but that's not live. That doesn't count. Well, I'll say this, and I was talking with my Black and Gold Banneret colleague, Andrew Glucko. It's not a matter of if this game contained John Rhys Plumlee's best throw. It's which throw it is. Some say that back shoulder piece that you're talking about. I would argue for the ball that set up the Bowser touchdown to open the third quarter being put exactly where it needed to be, over the shoulder, on the outside. No way the DB was getting to that. And, oh, by the way, it just happened to land in the beautiful breadbasket area for Kobe Hudson there. So, you know, you could nitpick which one you think it was, but, Mark, I can't agree with you definitively. It is this game that he's had his best throw of the year, and one can only hope and expect that more is to come from John Rhys Plumlee.
Okay, I will nitpick Gus Malzahn, and I know he'll yell at me when I do this, but I have to do this on my show. I have to do it. The game plan to start out on offense was like, I don't know, they kept trying to do, like, reverse plays that turned into flea flickers. But then we're only thrown for 5 yards down the field. And, like, there are too many throws to start the game where they were only going, like, some of them are like wide receiver type screens. Like, those types of plays you don't start the game with. You do that in the third and fourth quarter when you beat up someone. Like, you got, like, from the opening, you got to attack down the field to get the defense on their heels. That is the stuff that I would mix up moving forward. What about you, buddy?
Well, I'll put it this way. Maybe not specific to this game, because as we established earlier, Mark, you have no evidence to believe that the receivers can produce like that yet. You have no reason to believe the line will protect to allow for that, and you have no reason to believe that Plumlee will hit those passes, right? You know, to be fair, John Rice still missed a few he should have had that were wide open.
Yeah.
I can make an argument that he might be disappointed looking at the film. He wasn't 70%. Okay, now granted, a lot to ask, but in context, you'll see what I mean. You know, when you're missing wide open receivers. Going into Cincy, one has to think that's part of the conversation. Unless you're lacking that much confidence in the O-line against what is a tough Cincinnati front, I can agree that some explosive shots, or at least sending someone down the field to make a safety think about cheating up to attack Bowser in the run, is certainly a worthwhile element in the game plan. I can see where you're coming from there for sure.
I don't know if you know this, but watching a UCF game and then following the fans on Twitter is like a roller coaster. It's like you're laughing because you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I do.
Oh, man. It is wild. I mean, you're just fire this guy and bench that guy. Why are we doing this? I was like, you know what this is? This is a real fan base now. This is like, yeah, we've gone to the next level. That's how I look at it. What about you?
You know, it's funny, and they do this to Gus with a guy that has tenure. Like, it's one thing when you're dealing with first-time coaches like Frost, first-time head coaches, I should say, like Frost or Heupel, and every week it's fire this guy and this. They're going after Gus, who is a tenured former SEC coach who has beaten Nick Saban in open field regular season battle more than any other coach, and they still want to pop the tires in the Gus Bus the moment it looks awful.
Dude,
you gotta love passionate fans, Mark Moses.
Dude,
I'm just saying.
I had people writing, oh, we should add Scott Frost as the offensive coordinator because Gus doesn't know what he's doing. What? I get it. Look, I get it. The expectation of the fan base is to win every game. It's not like I always talk about this. What's the standard? Standard is go win the conference and go play in a big bowl game. And we're going to the Big 12. There's an arrogance there, and I love it, Kyle. I really do. I think it's awesome. What do you think?
I mean, isn't that life if you're going to be a big college football school? Like, if you don't have expectations to risk having that shot on ESPN of, you know, the losing Cobra, right? You know, that thing where they got their hands on their head and their arm extended and they're like, oh no, in absolute disgust.
Yeah.
If you don't have enough expectation in your fan base to expect that moment if something goes wrong, are your fans passionate enough? That's a fair question.
I actually think the Wednesday night was fantastic. I didn't want a hurricane, but you talk about national exposure. It was the only game on last night, Kyle. It's the only game in town nationally.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And that's been the strategy for like the MAC and other conferences like that for some time when they pull this, you know, card of playing on a Wednesday night. 100% accurate.
It was, dude, what was the crowd like last night?
You know, it wasn't very big. I think that a lot of that is due to displacement as well as, being a Wednesday night and being a reschedule and all of that. But for what it was, they were still plenty loud, Mark. I think there was more than half. I think the number was around 27K, something like that, in a facility that holds between, I think it's like 44, 45, 48, somewhere like that. But the punchline is, for what was there, you wouldn't know the difference immediately unless you had lived it before, that the bounce house was as empty as it was. But, I mean, that's the downside to a Wednesday night, especially when it was scheduled for a Saturday before, and it's fresh off a natural disaster and all of the above. You know, but fans still came out in force, and listen, players and coach alike paid them tribute for their presence and assistance in throwing off SMU's offense. And to your point, that offense, it did not have its best night. Say what you will about Rashee Rice, who's a nationally relevant wide receiver. He dropped balls that you do not expect him to drop. And that's part of the facts of the case. And by the way, Mark, one more quick stat.
What?
This game for Tanner Mordecai, right, since he's gone to SMU, his first without a passing touchdown.
That's a crazy stat. That, I mean, the way he was throwing the ball in the first half, that is nuts. Mm-hmm. It really is. You know what's funny? I think about, I just want you to know this. The problem with trying to drive to a UCF game when it's a weeknight is now when I'm on campus, I don't really usually have a problem trying to get to parking. I don't know about you. I don't think it's that bad. Because like if you're ever going to the University of Florida, yeah, it's awful trying to drive around the campus. Right. UCF's not bad. It's when I'm driving on 50, right? So it's 520 turns into 50 and you're heading there. When you get to Colonial Drive, and then it's like, you know what I'm talking about here, right?
So I really do.
So it's like 408. So I think what happens is, like, it was 7 o'clock kick last night. People are getting off work, and maybe they're trying to drive home. So, like, Colonial has too many stoplights, and you're just stuck. It's the we need another, like, road that just goes straight to the campus. So work on that, Mayor. Come on, buddy. Make it happen.
Hey, don't get me started on light rail, Mark Moses. I feel like that should have been put in years ago.
It really should. Oh, man. I'm telling you, it's just that road with all the streetlights. It's like awful.
Oh, terrible.
It's just terrible. I usually what I do is I try to go one of those back roads and go through the residential areas to get to parking. Is that what you do?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And listen, I'm fortunate enough to maneuver my schedule. When they moved it to Wednesday, I basically maneuvered my work schedule to assure that it was no different than a Saturday from my perspective. I'm lucky enough to be able to do that. But then again, I'm not trying to come from Melbourne either, and I still use back roads. So that should tell you everything you need to know.
You know what's funny? So the map says it's 49 miles, the bounce house from my studio. It's not even that far. That's so funny about it. It really isn't. And by the way, I'm super jealous, Kyle, that you saw that second half, because the only game I've gotten to go to is the Louisville game, and I try to black that out of my brain. I hope you know that.
I don't blame you, but to change sports on you, Mark Moses,
what?
The two of us spent an awesome second half together for men's basketball last year, so you can always cling to that, brother.
Yeah, that's right. When they beat Michigan in one of the craziest games where UCF turned into like the Golden State Warriors for some reason. Like it just shooting the three. We need to go. When's that media day for the new season? Have they done that yet for basketball?
They have not. I believe we're about 2 weeks away from that. I know the AAC basketball media day is the 19th and 20th, if I remember correctly. And then it'll be shortly after that UCF holds theirs.
All right. I need to look. I might have to go to this. I went to Magic media day. Dude, that new training facility, practice thing there, it's unbelievable downtown for the Magic.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks awesome. I couldn't make it because I was at a football presser, but I've seen the pictures from the facility. It is pretty awesome.
It is. This guy's name is Kyle Nash with Black and Gold Banneret and 3-point conversion for NFL Jaguar coverage. My man, thanks for your help and have a great weekend.
Honor, joy, and privilege, Mark. Always great to be aboard. But until next time, my friend, class.